Hello, this is Paula with the Vermilion County News on Thursday, July 6, 2017. We'll start with a story titled Leader of the Pack, Fetch Dog Park Honors Facility's Founder, written by Mary Wyckoff in Danville. And there's a picture of John C. Mason Jr. posing with a new sign that honors him at the special needs area at Fetch Dog Park. 10 years ago, Dr. John C. Mason Jr. had a vision of opening a dog park so pooches such as his own Maggie and people could socialize. This park has come a long way, he said, while relaxing recently with 11-year-old Maggie and a friend, Barbara McComb, at Fetch Dog Park. All the trees have made a difference. He added, the park is serene. The dogs love it. We certainly want to play people to enjoy it. Now, there is another change at the park, which opened in June of 2010. A sign on the gate to the special needs area honors the retired Dr. John C. Mason Jr. special needs area for the enjoyment of members with limited mobility. The special needs area is designed to accommodate people in wheelchairs and walkers, as well as dogs that might not play well with others. Mason also hopes veterans will bring their service dogs to the park. Mason, 87, was surprised when he was presented with a sign at a Fetch meeting in June. While he appreciates it, he said he thinks co-founder Daryl Jacobs' name should have been on the sign as well. Jacobs came up with the idea to honor Mason, who had the concept for the dog park and also for the special needs section. He's a terrific guy. He deserves it, Jacobs said. Mason got the idea in 2007 when he was walking Maggie, a Glen of Imal Terrier from Ireland in Florida, and met someone who suggested visiting the local dog park. Maggie had a wonderful time chasing the other dogs. When Mason returned to Danville, he wanted Maggie to have that same experience. He enlisted help from Jacobs, an attorney who also has visited dog parks in Florida. The two collaborated with the city and began planning and fundraising, eventually opening the 5-acre park in Eppenshen Park on the North Kimball off Voorhees Street. The special needs area opened last year. It was Mason's idea and was spearheaded by volunteer Jerry Venute and Jacobs. The special needs area, located on the small dog side, measures about 200 by 70 feet. Concrete in the entrance area and a sidewalk are good for people in wheelchairs and with walkers. Easier to open and wider gates were installed. The Ambucks donated money for a picnic table that can accommodate wheelchairs. The new area also is ideal for dogs that tend to be too rambunctious with other dogs or puppies that haven't been socialized yet. With a smaller area, it's easier for the owner to get control of the dog. Mason also noted that more service dogs are being used for veterans with post-traumatic stress disorder, and the area would be good for them. Having a dog has made a world of difference for him. For some veterans, he said. We will develop whatever it takes to make it available to them, he said. Jacobs said fundraising is underway to add other features to that area, such as benches and umbrella-type shelters, water for the dogs, and a waste disposal site. Fetch is open only to members whose fees contribute to the park's upkeep. In 2018, membership fees will be increased to $30 for the first dog and reduced fees for the other dogs in order to cover the rising costs of insurance and maintenance. Mason is surprised that more people don't know about the park. With the special amenities, we hope people take the time to take a look at it, he said. FYI, learn more about Fetch Dog Park at www.fetchdogpark.org and https://facebook.com/fetchdogparkdanville, Illinois. Membership application forms are available on the website or at the park. Volunteers also are needed for mowing, trimming, cleanup patrol, and as a park rangers and members of the leadership team. Donations also are welcome and should be mailed to Elizabeth Grzelak, which is Grzelak, Secretary/Treasurer, 12 Newell Avenue, Danville, Illinois, 61832. Okay, the next story is titled Council Hears About Railroad Safety Study, written by Jennifer Bailey in Danville. In 2014, Danville area transportation study officials adopted and aldermen reviewed two railroad studies, a railroad at-grade safety study and a quiet zone study. The at-grade safety study evaluated possible improvements for railroad crossings in the city and included a recommendation of warning gates and train signaling system upgrade at the Griffin Street Railroad crossing near the Boys and Girls Club, where a 13-year-old boy died last week. Insufficient warning devices were determined at the CSX crossing on Griffin Street and three others in the study of eight crossings in Danville and Catlin. Danville Engineering and Urban Services Director David Schnell said 3 years ago about the study that it was a good basis to help prioritize what ones we'd like to work on. At Wednesday night's Danville City Council meeting, Schnell said they'd like to have a team put together, including City, Illinois Department of Transportation, and Illinois Commerce Commission officials, to perform a corridor safety study for the CSX Railroad corridor through the city. The study would assess railroad crossings for current conditions and recommended changes. There is a potential for the cost sharing, Schnell said. Schnell told Alderman he always recalled the railroad crossing on Griffin Street being flashing signals only. He believes there was a staging area near here for trains, and gates were not put there because they would have been down all the time, he said. Schnell said he also believes there could have been another set of flashing signals there in the past when another railroad line was there. The quiet zone and at-grade crossing studies from 3 years ago included possible measures to improve safety at railroad crossings, such as median bars, barriers, double gates, and pedestrian gates. Schnell said the Griffin Street crossing is the only one at main line tracks without gates. Other railroad crossings in the city without gates, but only one to two trains a week crossing over them, include at Hazel and Jackson Streets. Other data from the at-grade railroad crossing study from 2014 on the Griffin Street CSX crossing, 29.20 hours was the 2014 total daily traffic delay in hours, which was expected to increase in 20 years to 46.67 hours, 0.035 expected crash frequency per year, and 28.2 years expected between crashes. Also Tuesday, Alderman heard Mayor Scott Eisenhower talk about possible state budget impacts of upwards of $700,000 on the city's budget due to revenue losses. Eisenhower also told the City Council Moody's Investors Service, a bond rating company, downgraded Danville's bond rating from A3 to Baa2 due to the city's unfunded pension burden growth. The downgrading doesn't affect the city's current bonds, but would impact future bonds, Eisenhower said. In other businesses, the City Council approved applying for a COPS grant to hire three police officers. Okay, we'll run through the obituaries. Harvey Leroy Reeser, 75, passed away Sunday, July 2nd at VA Ileana Healthcare System in Danville, Illinois. A celebration of Leroy's life will be at 1 p.m. on Friday, July 7th at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center, 3940 North Vermilion Street in Danville. Entombment with military honors will follow at Sunset Memorial Park. Visitation will be from 4 to 7 p.m. on Thursday, July 6th at the funeral home. Memorial donations may be made in Leroy's name to the American Cancer Society. Stephen D. Kelly, 75, of Ridge Farm, passed away at 10:15 p.m. on June 28, 2017. Celebration of life service will be at 2 p.m. on July 8th at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center, 3940 North Vermilion Street in Danville. Officiating will be Pastor James Blue. Burial will be at Crown Hill Cemetery. Visitation will be from 5 to 8 p.m. Friday, June 7th at the funeral home. Roger Bruce Thornton, 70, of Danville, passed away Thursday, June 29th at Presence United Samaritans Medical Center in Danville. Per his wishes, he was cremated, and his ashes will be interred with his mother in Spring Hill Cemetery. A time for fellowship and sharing of memories is planned for to 7 p.m. on Saturday, July 8th at Pape Family Funeral Home, 10 East William Street, Danville. Bring your own ride and blue jeans dress is requested. This is a party, no mourning. Raymond Floyd Nimerick, 74, of Tilton, passed away at 2:37 a.m. Tuesday, July 4th at Presence United Samaritans Hospital in Danville. A visitation will be from 2 to 4 p.m. on Sunday, July 9th at Sunset Funeral Home, 3940 North Vermilion Street in Danville, with a private family service at a later date. Burial will be at Sunset Memorial Park. Ray's family asks that memorials be made to the Second Church of Christ, 3350 East Voorhees Street in Danville, or the Vermilion County Animal Shelter at 14775 Catlin Tilton Road in Danville. Isabella Bailey. Services are at 11 a.m. today at the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, 1949 North Bowman Avenue in Danville. Wartford Funeral Services and Crematory in Tilton is assisting the family. Carolyn Maxine Barnes, 80, of Covington, Indiana. Services are at 10:30 a.m. today, EDT time, at Shelby Funeral Home in Covington. Visitation is from 4 to 8 p.m. today at the funeral home. Thomas Edward Birch, 82, of Tangier, Indiana. Celebration of Life, 10 to 2 EDT time, Saturday, July 8th, at Tangier Community Center. Sanders Funeral Care is assisting the family. Lucille Triplett Eaton, 91, of Danville. Visitation from 11 to noon, Saturday, July 8th, at New Jerusalem Church of Jesus Christ World Outreach Ministries in Danville. Services noon on Saturday at the church. Leek & Sons Funeral Home in Danville is assisting the family. Richard L. Dick G., 90, of Marshfield, Indiana. Visitation noon to 2 p.m. EDT time on Friday, July 7th, at Grady Funeral Home in Williamsport, Indiana. Service is at 2 p.m. on Friday at the funeral home. Wade Rusty Coffee Harrison II, 72, of Attica, Indiana. Services at 1 p.m. today, EDT time in Attica, at First United Methodist Church, 200 East Jackson Street in Attica. Memorial gathering to follow at Harrison Hills Country Club. Mouse Funeral Home in Attica is assisting the family. John Frederick Fred Holdcraft Jr., 89, of Pine Village, Indiana. Visitation is 5 to 7:45 p.m. today, EDT time, at Mouse Funeral Home in Attica. Masonic Memorial Services at 7:45 EDT time today, followed by an Eastern Star Memorial Service. Service at 11 a.m. EDT time on Friday, July 7th, at the funeral home. Dorothy Marie Ungrich, 99, of Covington, Indiana, formerly of Hoopston. Visitation is from 10 to 11 today at Blurton Funeral Home in Hoopston. Services at 11 today at the funeral home. Delbert Lindsay. Services are at 11 a.m. Saturday, July 8th at Georgetown Cemetery in Georgetown. Wartvert Funeral Services and Crematory in Tilton are assisting the family. Reba Aline Martin, 83, of Belgium. Visitation from 5 to 7 today at Catlin Church of Christ. Service at 10 a.m. Friday, July 7th at the church. Robeson Chapel in Catlin is assisting the family. Marceline Amy McGurk of Covington, Indiana. Services at noon Saturday, August 12th at Covington United Methodist Church. And that is August. So ARN Funeral and Cremation Services is assisting the family. Martha Jane Sowers, 90, of Newport, Indiana. Graveside services at 10 a.m. EDT time on Friday, July 7th at Thomas Cemetery in Newport. Visitation from 4 to 7 p.m. EDT time today at Duverter Funeral Home in Cayuga, Indiana. Sharon Edwards, 63, of Hoopston, formerly of Saginaw, Michigan, died at 2:41 a.m. Tuesday, June 20th at home. Memorial services will be at noon on Saturday at the Girl Scout House in McFerrin Park in Hoopston. Blurton Funeral Home, 309 East Washington Street in Hoopston, is in charge of the arrangements. And Nova Gilbert, 82, of Danville, died on Wednesday, July 5th at Danville Care. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Pape Family Funeral Home, 10 East William Street in Danville. Okay. From the Village of Ridge Farm, scammers pretend to be TV workers. The village warned residents of scammers going around town impersonating satellite dish employees and wearing outfits with DirecTV on them. They are knocking on doors and saying they need to see the satellite box, or there may be an issue to gain access to the inside of the house. After they leave, someone comes from down the road and picks them up, the village said. Police have caught some of them, those involved, the village said, but urged residents to use caution when opening doors to strangers. And in Westville Village Board, police seek new computers, printers in Westville. Trustees heard details of the request by the Westville Police Department to find the acquisition of new computers, printers, and related hardware. The need for new equipment is due to recent improvements made to the county's 911 dispatching network. According to Police Chief David Boo, the new system will allow police officers to see in real time exactly what the 911 dispatchers are entering into the system. This will allow Westville officers to respond quicker, possibly cutting 6 to 8 minutes off their response time. When a 911 dispatcher takes a telephone call, after collecting all the information from the callers, the dispatcher must determine what jurisdiction and what car is the closest to the incident, Boo said. With the new system, our officers will be able to see the call as the dispatcher is entering the information and respond right away. Bowie said the system will allow the responding officer to search for the address to see if there have been other calls made from there and bring up criminal checks and photos on anyone associated. The system will also have information on boat and aircraft registration as well as federal terrorist watch list. And from Rankin United Methodist Church, mental health first aid course is set. A mental health first aid course will be offered at the Rankin United Methodist Church at 328 North Main Street from 8:30 a.m. to 5 p.m. July 17th. The 8-hour course is free and open to anyone who encounters young people aged 12 to 18. Anyone who completes the course will receive a 3-year certification in youth mental health first aid from the National Council of Behavioral Health. Participants will learn a 5-step action plan to identify young people showing signs of crisis and connect them with further help. To register for the course, email ebass, that's E-B-A-S-S, at aunt Martha's.org, which is, like I said, E-B-A-S-S, at aunt Martha's.org, or call 217-566-2298. Okay, the next story is Illinois House of Representatives, Black Wayne Run for Former Seat, written by Tom Kasich. And there's a picture of former State Representative Bill Black says he may run to reclaim the seat he gave up. Almost 25 years in the Illinois House of Representatives may not have been enough for Danville Republican Bill Black. He said Wednesday that he's giving serious thought to running to succeed State Representative Chad Hayes, Republican from Catlin, who earlier this week announced that he would not run for another term next year. Hayes had succeeded Black as a Danville area representative in December of 2010. I know my way around that situation a little bit, and I think I could be an advocate for this district as Chad was, and an advocate for community colleges and the University of Illinois and education, said Black, who is on the board of Danville Area Community College. I'm not a shrinking violet, and I'm not going to go over there and say, oh, gee whiz, why did you do that? Black is 75 years old, about 6 months older than House Speaker Michael Madigan, but about 18 months younger than the current Dean of the House, State Representative John Cavalletto, the Republican from Salem. I'd be 77 years old when I was inaugurated, but a good thing is I'm not going to go over there and say, boy, I want to stay here as long as I could stay, he said. It would be with no trepidation and no fear of what might happen to me other than health-related. Black acknowledged that he has kidney disease, but it's under control, and he had what he called a mild heart attack 3 years ago, but I've got a great cardiologist. He said he and wife Sharon were out and about yesterday, and people were very encouraging. I don't know. I'm having lunch with people, and we're going to talk about it. Obviously, I'd like to see the seat stay in Vermilion County. Champaign County is the only other county in Hayes's 104th district. When he announced his retirement in 2010, Black said he wanted to spend more time with his family, including his grandchildren. My grandkids, three of them, are out of high school now, so it's not like I want to run down and visit the grandkids every day. And Grandma and Grandpa aren't as excited now as we were when the grandkids were little, he said. Black, who began serving in the House in 1986, said, I enjoyed the work, I liked it, and I missed some of those people. He said he wants to talk to House Minority Leader Jim Durkin of Western Springs before going further in his deliberations. He's a serious leader who's caught in an almost impossible vice, Black said of Durkin and his relationship with Governor Bruce Rauner. He's a very smart guy, and he's trying to walk a tightrope where a guy on one end is saying, I've got a lot of money that will help you guys in campaigns, and then you look at the other end, and it's, yeah, but that money comes with some horrendous pressure. Black said he recently met with U.S. Representative Mike Bost of Murfreesboro. At one time, they were colleagues in the Illinois House. We both agreed that we don't miss the circus, but we miss some of the clowns. And I don't mean that as a pejoratory term, Black said. Some of the performers and people were nice people. I loved the staff. It's a different environment, but I think I could navigate through it. And now that at my age, I'm not going to go over there thinking, oh gosh, how am I going to run for 2020 and 2022? I'm not going to worry about it at all. I just want to run year to year. Well, it's kind of a slow news day, so I'll read an editorial here titled, Limit Access to Voter Data. A representative of the Illinois State Board of Elections said board members will decide next month whether to comply with the request from a voting commission appointed by President Donald Trump. The federal commission wants the name, address, party affiliation, voting history, military record, felony record, and the last four numbers of the Social Security number of every registered voter in every state. The Illinois board members should join their counterparts in 10 states and the District of Columbia, Democrat and Republican, who flatly denied the request. Officials in more than 30 or so states will provide only part of the information in compliance with their respective state laws. For example, Indiana officials will share voters' names, addresses, and congressional district, which is the only part of the voter registration information already available to the public. Supporters of the request say the information will be used to combat voter fraud, of which representatives of almost every state there is little evidence. The Federal Commission was born in the aftermath of the 2016 presidential election when President Trump won the Electoral College but lost the total popular vote. He has contended since then that the voter fraud caused him to lose the popular vote. Opponents of the request say the information will be used to suppress voter turnout in future elections, a tactic already shown to occur in several states. The amount of time, money, and effort spent on chasing down the non-existent cost of a non-existent problem staggers the imagination. With talks of deep cuts to programs that actually help people, the pursuit of this vanity quest seems to be an immense waste. Illinois officials should borrow the response from Mississippi's Republican Secretary of State, Delbert Hosemann, but substitute Lake Michigan and Illinois where appropriate. My reply would be, they can go jump in the Gulf of Mexico, and Mississippi is a great place to launch from. And editorial, sorry to see Hayes leave. The ongoing budget fiasco in Illinois created lots of problems that will require months, probably years, to resolve. And one of the biggest is the image of the General Assembly as a place where a few leaders control all of the action. The frustration among members is evident. State Representative Chad Hayes, Republican from Catlin, decided he has put up with enough. After joining 14 other Republicans to join Democrats in the House to pass the state budget, the first in 3 years, Hayes announced he would not run for re-election. The political standoff between Governor Bruce Rauner, a Republican, and Democratic leaders in the House and Senate, Michael Madigan and John Cullerton, respectively, prevented the General Assembly from accomplishing much. Hayes represented our area well and played a role in his party's House leadership. He listens to proposals from others, a forgotten asset in Springfield, and continues to put the needs of his constituents, not his party, first. Political maneuvering to be able to place blame on opponents stands as the primary goal in Springfield these days. Actually accomplishing anything of value for the state's residents took a backseat long ago. We're already subjected to dozens of campaign ads for an election that is 16 months away. Hayes is one of the good guys. He will continue to serve as he always has until his term runs out in 2018. We will be sorry to see him go. Okay, Dan's game with Gems rained out in Quincy. The Danville Dan's game on Wednesday with the Quincy Gems was postponed to July 12th because of rains in the area of Quincy Stadium. The game will be part of a doubleheader on July 12th, starting at 5 p.m. at Danville Stadium. The Dans return home today to play Terre Haute Rex, starting at 6:30 p.m. Okay, Griffiths Family Search offers research help. With an ever-increasing number of genealogical records being made available on the Internet beginning and being advanced, researchers need a guide for using such resources effectively. The Family Search Wiki, W-I-K-I, free online encyclopedia, has provided a guide, United States Records Selection Table, that helps researchers decide which records are most helpful for specific tasks. For example, if you wish to know an ancestor's birth date, first look in vital records, church records, and Bible records, then look in cemeteries, obituaries, and census records. This chart provides search answers for dozens of goals, including city or parish of foreign origin, immigration date, maiden name, occupation, and places the family has lived. This helpful guide can be found at http://tinyurl.com/zqpud6p. Another helpful Family Search wiki, solving tough research problems, overcoming brick walls, can be found at tinyurl.com/y93qq79f. Use this checklist of concepts and research techniques to help you solve a variety of difficult research problems. And all researchers can benefit from such timely reminders. Beginners could also click on the link to rookie mistakes at the end of the article. A list of rookie mistakes, their consequences, and how experiences teaches you to do better, a self-improvement checklist. The term burned counties was first used in search in Virginia, where many county records were destroyed in courthouse fires or during the Civil War. Family Search has created a list of those at tinyurl.com/y7qtyc5f. So anyway, a lot of mumble jumble there, but maybe you want to look for some records. So anyway, I guess that'll do for today. Thursday, July 6th, 2017. I hope you all had a good 4th of July, and hopefully it'll be a good week this week, and we'll be able to see you again next week. So you all have a good week, and take care. Bye-bye.